Hello, and welcome to this special edition of Social Justice Matters. My name is Eamon Murphy. I'm Social Justice Ireland's Economic and Social Analyst. Social Justice Ireland is a key partner in a master's programme that's run in conjunction with Waterford Institute of Technology and delivered in Dublin City. This programme is called the MA in Social Justice and Public Policy. This special episode of Social Justice Matters contains a few different pieces and should be of great interest to anyone who's considering enrolling in this MA. The episode is anchored by MA programme leader Paul Clougher of Waterford Institute of Technology, and it covers a few pieces. Firstly, the evolution of the programme and the major ideas and themes behind it in a conversation between Paul and SGI CEO Dr. Sean Healy, who's actually one of the lecturers on the programme. It then moves on to some insight into the student experience of the programme, where you'll hear from Suzanne Rogers and John McGeady, who are currently in year two of the MA. There's also input from John O'Brien. John's a lecturer in sociology at Waterford IT and director of research on the MA. He'll be talking about the research element of the programme. And finally, from Paul Clougher himself on the question of meanings and values. Now, there's more details about this programme available on our homepage, socialjustice.ie. There's an article entitled Enrolment Now Open for Masters in Social Justice and Public Policy on the main page. It was published there on April 16th, but it's still on the homepage. Or feel free to ring SJI on 01290 3597 to speak to one of our staff, all of whom have been involved in delivering parts of the programme at some point. And now, over to Paul and the gang.
How do you use that passion that you have and that sometimes that anger that you have and make it work? You know, you can sit in the pub, not that we're allowed in the pubs, but again, you can sit in the pub and you can do, well, somebody really should do something about that. You know, isn't that terrible, awful, shocking, you know, all that kind of stuff. How do you actually change that? How do you go about doing that? That's what this master's is preparing you for.
You're listening to Social Justice Matters in association with the Waterford Institute of Technology. And my name is Paul Clougher. I'm programme leader for the MA in Social Justice and Public Policy. And this podcast will explore some aspects of the programme. We'll look at its origins. We'll also look at what the programme involves, and speak to some of the present students on the programme about their experience and indeed motivation for enrolling in the programme. The MA is a two-year part-time programme which seeks to give students a unique opportunity to develop a theoretical framework and the deep capacity for analysis, understanding, knowledge, skills and practices needed to engage meaningfully in social change toward a more just and inclusive society, focusing particularly on influencing public policy. Waterford IT and Social Justice Ireland are partners in the development of this programme. And first we spoke to Dr. Sean Healy, the CEO of Social Justice Ireland, and I began by asking him about the origins of the programme and its development over the last 25 or so years.
I suppose the history is simple enough. It has its genesis 25 years ago in 1995, when CORI Justice, as it was at the time, which was an NGO, and it started, and I was dealing with social justice issues, started an internship, okay? The internship was aimed at people who were working in the area of social disadvantage or who wanted to improve their skills in order to generate social change, influence public policy, communicate better, and so on. And our board at the time felt that we had developed a set of skills in the preceding 10 years that was quite useful and that it would be good to share them. So we ran that for about 10 years, in fact, exactly 10 years. And it involved a number of people, four or five people, usually each year, coming into our office for a week every month. And kind of, we did a certain amount of lectures, a certain amount of practice and stuff. And it was good. And there was a lot of gain in it. And a lot of people did it and were happy with it. But about 2005 then, that was 1995, in about 2005, one of the people who had been through the internship discover that it would be possible to run it as a master's degree. At that time in All Hallows College, which the degrees were DCU degrees, you know. And then, so that was like for 10 years, we ran it there. And that was okay. And the trouble then, of course, was that All Hallows closed down and there was a recruitment embargo at the time in third level, and DCU couldn't take any programs from All Hallows over. So it was in subsequent discussion then that a number of universities and colleges offered us a possibility of putting it there, putting it in their particular institutions. And we opted for WIT because we felt that that was the best home for it. And as a result, the consortium was set up to run it between WIT and Social Justice Ireland. And it's doing well now again. It's back up and running. It's a 2-year program, part-time. And it's aimed at anybody who's interested in public policy, but particularly people working in public policy, social policy, and particularly looking at issues around poverty, inequality, social exclusion, disadvantage, those kinds of areas, but not totally that. But also, it covers not just Ireland, but it would cover the European Commission and all of the European dimension, and then some of the global issues as well, obviously, as we continue to discover more and more regularly. This world of ours is a very small place, and things that happen in one part of the world impact on other parts. And particularly things that could happen in China can impact on Ireland and so on. So you've got to have some grasp of all of that. So the idea is to the master's then puts together a set of skills in social analysis and social policy. It looks at sort of social justice and the kind of various theories there. It looks at how to communicate and gives some very good hands-on experience of writing press releases, doing interviews, having those kinds of things critiqued. And then and that would be in the kind of a broadcast process. And then it also has a range of other modules in there, looking at advocacy and looking at values and looking at perspectives and get people with different views, or analyzing how people's views affect the way they look at decision making, if they're in the decision making side or whatever the issue may be. So it's quite extensive, but it's focused principally on generating social change and influencing public policy.
Yeah. And from your perspective, in particular, you work in program or in modules and courses, particularly in social analysis and how social analysis is important to policy formation and indeed the critique of public policy as well. How important is it to bring that analytical imagination to, if imagination be the right word, but that analytical mindset to public policy? And what can students and those interested in the program expect from that?
Well, I think it's one of the most important things if you're working in public policy is that you have to have a capacity for analyzing what's going on and for analyzing into the future, like where might this issue, like if you're dealing with an issue like poverty or unemployment, if you're dealing with homelessness or some housing problem, if you're dealing with childcare or rural development or regional development or whatever, if you're dealing with equality or any of the equality issues or disability or healthcare or education, no matter what it is, okay, we would say it's very important that you have the tools and the capacity to kind of analyze the present situation effectively, so that you know what's going on, that you can cast your mind forward then and sort of have the skills required to come up with some kinds of ideas about where this situation that you need to address, where it might go, how it might develop and so on, What would a good outcome be if it were to be changed from its present inadequate situation? And the third piece of it is how you get from where it is now to where you think it ought to be. So that's our kind of simple ABC, if you like. A is where things are, B is where they are going, and or where you want them to go, and C is how you get them from one to the other. So to do that, there are skills of social analysis, and people will learn these on the program. And there's also, you know, it isn't just social analysis, there's the economic analysis as well. And it's very important to be able to do social analysis and to analyze the reality as it is, and to basically have some good ideas about where it wants to go and how it might get there. So there's economic dimensions to that, there's political dimensions, there's cultural dimensions, social dimensions, environmental dimensions. And there's a whole lot of stuff that's worth learning if you want to be effective at it, which I'm sure anybody who's interested in doing the program wants to be effective at it. And if you want to be effective at social policy, you have to have this capacity of looking at it and being able to sort of recognize that these things are not, the way they're structured at the moment is not an accident. You know, that these things actually have a base and sort of are caused because of the way we choose to organize our resources and our decision making and our relationships and so on, and our values as well, of course.
Yes.
So, and the idea that, then what happens is, you learn in the program, you learn the skills of social analysis, because that would be very important. But you also learn a whole lot of stuff around what's possible in the future, because it's very important to realize that in some way or other, like, change is possible. Like, it's not a good idea to get the idea to get something like that. Change isn't possible. That would be a, yes. You know, there wouldn't be much point to social policy study if all you were doing was dealing with things that you couldn't do anything about, like, you know. Yeah. So it's very important to realize that social change is possible. So a lot of the work that's done in the program is, it looks at how to generate social change and how to deal with that, whether it's at an individual level or a group level or at a political level or at a level, for example, a policy level that the government works on, like budget, its annual budget program and things of that nature, or a whole lot of other things there, where how they're actually made, how laws are made and so on. But so you look at the present and see that, but you also look to the future and the alternatives that are there, and then have some kind of idea about how to make choices about what's the best way to move, what's the best direction to take. So, for example, if you want to deal with the housing crisis, there's a lot of ideas about how you deal with it. Not much success at the moment in dealing with it. And there's a lot of homelessness and a lot of people over in poor accommodation and so on. We have far too few social housing units in the country. So if we wanted to get from here to a situation where there would be adequate social housing and everybody would have appropriate accommodation, what would that look like when it was final, when it was done? And how do you get from here to there? They're the kinds of questions that would be dealt with. Now, underpinning all of that are values and understandings. So there's a whole module looking at human rights and theories of justice and so on, theories of social justice. Because there's different theories of justice, and it's important for students to understand that and for people involved in policy for two reasons. It's important to understand what their own mindset is about.
Indeed, yeah.
Social justice, and what theories of social justice do they actually operate out of or do they support? But it's not just that. If you actually want to negotiate with somebody or discuss policy with somebody who has a position that has them making decisions like in the policy area, it's very important that you get to understand how that person holds the positions they do. And sometimes people feel that the other person's positions are crazy and you can't deal with them and so on. But it's important to recognize that that person probably thinks they're very sane and that they're very sensible And it's very important, if you're in negotiating with them, that you understand what their position is and why they hold it.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, if they're going to make a decision about a policy issue that you're chasing, like changing housing policy or something, that's a big ask. And if to convince them, you have to be able to understand their mindset and then be able to counter that in some way. The issue of human rights is very important because there are human rights implications here, because people have rights to, you know, think of their life with dignity, right to work, right to accommodation, appropriate accommodation, and all of those kinds of things, and health and education and cultural respect and whatever. So it'd be very important that people in social policy or area understand human rights and understand theories of justice. So that would be part of the program as well.
Yeah.
And that is part of the program all the time, which is good in that sense. It gives people an opportunity, you know, to do those kinds of things.
So it's important to recognize that one of the unique features of the program is that it does allow people to both interrogate what they think is important and what they've assumed to be important up to now, perhaps in their lives or in their careers, and also to be able to read a situation when they hear someone say something. It's not just a question of it being something that they dislike, but rather something that comes from a particular place, and it needs to be brought into conversation with something, with the sensibility to make things better.
That's absolutely true, and that's absolutely core to the program, because one of the things I think, one of the ways I like to describe it is using Paulo Freire's kind of understanding that what you're actually doing is reading reality. So you have to get the skills to be able to read that, but then you have to have the skills to write a new reality.
Yes.
That's the way he would put it. So you're reading the reality that actually is there, but you want to change that, so you want to write a new reality. And you have to have the skills to do that as well. And the issue about this is that there's no mystery about it. Like there's just an understanding of how these processes work, and understanding there are theories that explain it, and getting a kind of an understanding of those is very important. It's not a complicated business. Like policy is more about understanding what's going on and being able to influence it and so on. And as I said, there's no magic formulas or whatever that have to be learned. It's just understanding, as you say, being able to read the reality accurately, and not just listening to the latest spin that you hear on television or whatever. And in a time like today, with so much fake news around, it's a very, very important thing to be able to do, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the way the thing actually works. Economics, of course, is part of it as well. Now, not a huge amount of economics, but enough economics so that you can understand what's going on in the economy. Because at one level, you have to kind of understand that there's more to reality than economics. Sometimes people don't know that or don't seem to know it, you know.
Yeah,
but it's very important to get that. And then and to understand that interacts with other things that are going on and whatever. Then there's the issue about being able to advocate. So the whole issue of advocacy and community organizing and networking for social justice, working with others, because very often generating change is very rarely done by one or two people. It's usually done by networks or groups that work together to try to change things over time. They have an understanding of it now if they go and do it. So that whole issue of advocacy and community organizing and networking for social justice, that's another module in there that I think is very good. And then we do a fair bit of stuff on communication. There's a couple of modules on communication. So there's the straightforward stuff that I suppose that people understand by communication, being able to kind of communicate the stuff that they're studying, communicate policy issues, and communicate whatever the reality is that they're reading, communicate whatever the reality is that they want to write, the new reality, to be able to communicate all that. But then there's also the second module in communications actually gets into how to do that in mass media and in social media and so on, and try to give people an understanding of what's actually happening in print media, what's happening in broadcasting, and what's happening in social media, and so that people can actually engage with it, which I think is very important, you know. So that's an important part of the process as well. So again, it's a program that's aimed at practitioners and people and who are in there. And then finally, there's also the research methods, of course, you know, that you have to be able to research stuff, because very often, I mean, when I was studying this a long time ago myself, I remember it was in the early days of computers, and there used to be much more complicated businesses to be loading up and taking loads of more time in those days. But anyway, but I remember getting a very early lesson in from somebody who was teaching us, and he was kind of saying there's a fundamental principle here, like what you get out of a computer depends an awful lot on what you put into it. So if you put garbage into it, you're going to get garbage out of it. Like, yes. Don't think that the computer is going to have the capacity to turn your garbage into some gold mine or whatever, you know.
Right.
So you have to understand how research, what's involved in research and so on. It doesn't mean that you have to become a whiz kid in research, but it means that you have to understand what you're talking about,
yeah,
which is an important thing in that, you know. So I think at the end of it then, people are well able to analyze public policy, to analyze issues, to analyze geographic areas like their own town or city or country or whatever, and also are able to kind of impact on policy. They understand how it works at a local level, whether that's a local authority or whatever, but they also know how it works at a national level, with government here or wherever they are. And then they also understand how it works at an international level with institutions like the European Commission, the European Union, because it has quite a lot of policy capacity as well, and it does a lot of work in policy, so you have to understand that. So we kind of, a certain amount of the stuff is done in that space as well. And it's done in a way that people learn mostly by drawing on their own experience and being able to analyze that and critique it and so on. And the other thing that's in there is to understand that the thing is examined not as an end of term or an end of year exam. Mm-hmm. The idea of cramming and all that, like, no, that's not the way the thing is. Because that's not the way the policy world, that's not the way the policy world works anyway. So all the time what you're doing is you're doing projects or various kinds of papers that you have to write. So each module that you're doing probably has one piece of work that you have to do for it, and you do it over the time that you're doing the module, and then you do it at the end. And we try to mirror the policy process, that what would happen if you were actually working in an organization and somebody said, look, can you give me some ideas about what to do about housing policy? What should I do about childcare? Okay, so the project you'd have like would be looking at, okay, how do I look at the present reality there? And if I wanted to write in your reality, what would it look like? Yes. And how would I get from here to there?
Yeah.
And then that would be the kind of paper that you'd have to do or whatever. And you have those kinds of, you kind of usually have one assignment per module, you know. Yes. Over the 2 years, there's about a dozen modules.
And the most important thing in all of that you mentioned is the whole idea that it's a process. This is not something where we continue, I suppose, education as we, maybe many of us experienced it as we grew up, that, you know, education was something where you listen to somebody at the top of the room, you kind of repeated what they said, and then you continued that process. But rather, it's something that you develop over time. And as you say, the questions of justice, of analyzing policy, these are things that you just can't do in one shot. You've got to give yourself the time to write that new reality.
And I think one of the things that going right on to that, like, is that we try to help people so that when they finish this program, that they're in this kind of mindset, if you like, so that when they leave the program and they're back in their job or whatever they're doing all the time, but they were in their job all the time, of course, but that they continue with that approach, if you like, so that they know what's involved. They don't. They won't need us to be kind of propping, prodding them in any direction, because they will have learned the importance of learning as they go, improving their understanding of the way that things are, the present reality, improving their understanding of the changes that are possible and what's involved in generating them, and then how you might actually set about changing things, moving from the present towards that new reality that you want to write. And hopefully people come out of the program, and I think they do, clearly enough, with that whole thing kind of set up in their heads, if you like. Okay, clear. Yeah, so hopefully that'll be good. And so that anybody doing it should come out of it with that capacity built into them. A bit, I sometimes describe it to people on the program as saying, like, it's a bit like changing the gears when you're driving a car. You know, for people, most people use a stick shift around. And in the beginning, when they're learning to drive a car, they're very conscious of the gear lever and what gear am I in and so on. And eventually, when they're driving a while, they're paying no attention to it, really. They're doing it automatically. And the car is driving perfectly smoothly, and they're always in the right gear and all that sort of stuff. And it's about developing that capacity, if you like, to be able to deal with policy, do the reflection, come up with the ideas and the pathways forward, and know how to communicate that and advocate for it and so on.
Going through the gears, as they say, in every sense.
Exactly.
The one final topic that I wanted to broach is that, you know, in many ways, one of the most important aspects of the program is to enable people to recognize that the world in which we live is not automatic. It's not just natural. It's the result of choices. And one of the ways of thinking through that is this idea of a social contract. And often we're unaware of the social contract, because it's often, you know, people who are listening might be, you know, nerds of social theory, as they say, might be aware of the whole idea of the social contract as being almost unwritten. And it's precisely in the way that some things are unwritten that we fail to notice our ability to either analyze or indeed to change them.
I think that's absolutely spot on, and very much so the case at the moment as the world deals with COVID-19 and looks at it and sees what's there, and has some very, I think, a novel of people have some very serious ideas and thoughts about not going back to business as usual. Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is, the social contract basically is a kind of understanding between the state and the citizen. And that understanding basically says that the state will provide some kind of income floor under you, and it'll provide social services like health and education and social welfare, and it will provide infrastructure like maybe public transport and housing and so on. And then on the other side, the citizen basically commits to getting a job and keeping the law and making a contribution to society. Okay, the interesting thing is that this is very rarely reflected on and very rarely written down. You know, very rarely is it actually written down. But it's there, and everybody knows, and they grow up with it and they learn it and so on. What's happening right now, I think, is that people are realizing that maybe the social contract wasn't the best for people, the shape of it, and that maybe we need to rethink it, and that we need a new social contract. And certainly Social Justice Ireland would be arguing for a new social contract, because I think we would be arguing for a social contract that recognizes, for example, that everybody should have enough income to live life with dignity, should have meaningful work, should have appropriate accommodation, should have relevant education, basic healthcare, should have cultural respect, especially if they're in minority culture, and should have real participation in shaping the decisions that affect them. Okay, now there's other rights obviously as well, but maybe seven that we would pick out and sort of say a social contract should ensure that these seven basic rights are being provided. At this moment and in the recent past, they've not been provided, not on the scale required, and there's a lot of people falling through safety nets that have lots of holes in them. And I think the issue of a new social contract is going to be something that is addressed across the world once COVID-19 is over, or is being dealt with anyway, effectively, because people are beginning to see that maybe the best way, that the way they were working wasn't the best way, or maybe there's something fundamentally wrong with the fact that corporations can get away with paying almost no tax, the big corporations, while people on PAYE have no choice but to pay their tax, and it's a lot more than the kind of percentage levels, it's multiples of the percentage levels that the big corporations would pay. And even small and medium enterprises might have the similar argument that they have no escape from paying their corporation tax, whereas the big corporations can get away with paying very little. So far less than the small and medium enterprises. So those kinds of things, there's a huge range of things when you start looking at it. But the capacity, I suppose, for thinking around these kinds of things is what this program gives you. Mm-hmm. Because when people do this master's program, when they've finished it, they're going to understand that things are not inevitable, that things emerge because decisions are made, that those decisions are made on values, on the basis of values, that their decisions very often are about resources that are available, and that how those decisions are, the decisions that are actually made and the values that underpin them, and the decisions that are made about the resources and so on, actually determine the social structures of our society. Because some people wind up doing very well, others don't wind up doing well at all. And there's something wrong with that if they're being, if people are trying very hard and so on, and not making a great deal of progress, whereas others, simply because they have a lot of money, can short circuit systems and you see their money increase all the time, and their riches increase all the time. So it's about taking a serious look at the social contract to see that the state and the individual have an understanding that it's the common good that should be given priority, and that every person should have the basics that are required to live life with dignity. And how that might be put into place, how it could be paid for, how we get from here to there. Those kinds of questions are the kinds of questions that this program has right across from start to finish.
And on that hopeful note, Sean Healy, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
And what can students expect on the program? Perhaps the best way to find out about this is to ask two of the current cohort. So I spoke to Suzanne Rogers and John McGeady, two students in year two of the program as I speak, and asked them to tell us about their motivations for the program, their experience thus far of the program, the opportunities it has given them, and indeed their research interests in questions of social justice and public policy.
I'm probably slightly different from some of the other students that you have there, in that I was being groomed for this whilst in All Hallows. So I did my primary degree part-time at night in All Hallows. That took an inordinate length of time. And during those years going in and out and doing classes, when this course was available through All Hallows with Social Justice Ireland, I was being sort of I suppose, kind of molded and pushed. You know what you should do next now? You should do the social justice masters next. That's what you should do next. So it was always in the back of my mind, All Hallows closed, the masters disappeared. And in hindsight, which is the best type of sight, it wouldn't have been a good idea to do it then anyway for me. So at the time, I was in sales and sales order processing. So I wouldn't have had any benefit out of it, and I wouldn't have anything to input into it. So I consider myself exceedingly fortunate that it appeared when it did, and that I'm in a job where it makes sense. So the two things now are linked. So I work for an NGO, I work for a charity that is trying to make change that influences social policy, and the two things now fit. So what you're learning in class fits into the job, and the job allows me to have, I suppose, a bit of grist to the mill, something to write about. So, and I suppose I would, you know, very much kind of for students coming in, don't just write about what you know. You know, you don't want to come out, if you're in education or health or housing or whatever area you're coming from, you don't want to do 2 years of just writing about what you already know, because then it's just a 2 years master's in housing, education or health. You know, this is policy, how policy is made with your social justice glasses on. And it has very, very, very much changed how I view the job I do and how I view the job that other people do as well. It's very interesting to have an insight into how other people should or shouldn't be doing their jobs as well. So, you know, there's definitely huge learning in it, and it's practical learning. It's not high, the theory in it, obviously, but then what does that mean? You know, what do all those ologies and isms actually mean? What can you hold in your hand? How do you make change? How do you affect change? All of those things. It's a very practical course of study that I think anybody in this arena would definitely benefit from.
And your background in All Hallows, for students who might be thinking of, they might be in a degree at the moment, they might be in an arts or humanities program, or indeed a social science program. How did your kind of foundational studies, let's call it, in All Hallows, shape your attitude towards this program?
You don't need to have the theology background, I don't think, but I definitely felt the benefit of having, for understanding even that kind of academic language. Do you know what I mean? I went to college as a mature student, and it's a different way of speaking. It's a different way of looking at the world. So for me, I did English literature and theology, and the theology definitely has that sort of social justice angle anyway. Do you know what I mean? Why do we do the things we do? You know, for what reasons are we looking to make the world a better place? The one word I keep coming back to is flourishing. Do you know what I mean? What are we doing to allow for human flourishing? Do you know, the sort of way, what kind of a world do we want to live in? So for me, I think it was a practical application of some of those, some of those sort of theories. You know, I keep going back to ologies and isms because I struggle with ologies and isms in a kind of a way, but this master's really would be the icing and the cherry on the top of your cupcake, you know. So it puts all of those abstract thoughts and abstract issues, I suppose, if, you know, everybody wants the world to be a better place, everybody wants everybody to have enough of everything. These are very abstract thoughts, you know. Everybody, you know, I'd imagine if you went out now, which you're not allowed out, but if you were allowed out of your house, that you could take a straw poll up and down your road and you'd say to people, do you think that everybody should have access to education? Do you think that everybody should have access to healthcare? Do you think that everybody should have access to the basics that they need for flourishing? You know, all that kind of, and people would say yes. Well, then how do you do that? Do you know what I mean? How do you get those those thoughts and shove them and move things forward. And it is very slow. It is very, very, very slow. But even in, say, you know, the Ireland of the last 100 years, I mean, the Ireland of the last 10 years is vastly different than it was. You know what I mean? The 80s Ireland, 90s Ireland, 2000 Ireland, they're hugely different places because of people who have that sort of social justice lens. I think what we seem to be hopefully moving towards a fairer society, generally speaking. Do you know that sort of a way? You know, these are kind of sweeping statements. But this master's, I think, does, it puts all that kind of, how do you use that passion that you have and that sometimes that anger that you have and make it work? You know, you can sit in the pub, not that we're allowed in the pubs, but again, you can sit in the pub and you can do, well, somebody really should do something about that. You know, it's not terrible, awful, shocking, you know, all that kind of stuff. How do you actually change that? How do you go about doing that? That's what this master's is preparing you for.
And then in terms of the student experience, for anybody who's listening in who might be considering, what do you think are the most important things to expect, be ready for, be ready to do battle with and within?
You would hope at master's level that it would be presumed that you are taking control of your own learning journey. So that's a given, you know what I mean? Whether this is entirely, you get out of it, I suppose, what you put in, which is that sort of old adage, you know what I mean? But, you know, the classes are, that week, you know, the week block is very intense. So the classes are either made up of a full week once a year and then one day a month for the rest of the year. So the full week is very intensive, you know, there's no doubt about that. But it is, again, that sort of that one day a month, you know, you kind of start to look forward to it almost, you know what I mean? But a lot of it is, I think you need to be very disciplined, and I think you need to be, you're in control of your learning, you're in charge of your learning. And but again, I would have presumed that anybody who's going to do a master's is at that stage, do you know what I mean? That it's not a case of, well, the lecturer didn't give me the right notes and, you know, the deadline was too short and all that kind of stuff. You've got tons of time. I mean, you get an essay title in March for something that's due for May. You get an essay title for February for something that's due for May. If you decide to leave it for the last 2 days, that's on you. That's not a, you know, the kind of a way. So it is a thing of, because I suppose it's not on campus either, that it's, you do, I think, you need to take charge of it. I suppose that would be the one thing I would say, is that for students who are maybe used to, you know, secondary school and possibly a third level where it was on campus and they saw their lecturers and they were in and out of libraries, that's not going to happen. You know what I mean? This is for grown-ups, I think, that it's something now, it's a little bit more mature. So that's the only thing. If you've come straight from school to third level and are doing this master's, that's quite a journey. You know, if you're a practitioner who's maybe coming at this, so, you know, you're in a position maybe where you're doing policy or you're interested in policy, I don't think that'll be as much of a struggle because you're already working, you're already managing your time, you're already functioning at that level. My area of interest, I suppose, is, generally speaking, I suppose, poverty, the impact of low income, all of that type of thing. Do you know what I mean? And housing is everywhere. You know, every conversation, every time you open a paper, even now, at this particular moment in time when there's nothing else in the media apart from COVID-19, homelessness figures are still getting quoted, they're still getting high level media press, you know what I mean? Because obviously the figures are coming down, you know, the whole Airbnb thing, you know, that sort of a way. So the research I'm doing is to examine to look, I suppose, at family hubs and to see how they function and what, I suppose, what's the remit, what's how, you know, do they deliver on that remit? You know, are there clear criteria for what it is that sort of they're supposed to do? It has to be very carefully done, because it's not a hatchet job. Do you know what I mean? It's a serious piece of research, because whilst you could sort of say systematically, you know, these things are not ideal, the individuals who I presume would work in these places would be, you know, highly professional, highly committed people. So even just an awareness of, I suppose, the ethics around research, the methodology around research, the focus, which I struggle with, all of that has been, you know, as I said, I'm finding it hard, but I think that's because there's genuine learning going on, you know, that sort of thing. If it was easy, I wouldn't have to do it. It's what I kind of keep coming back to, you know, but the supports are all there. Depending on the size of the class, you'll have a good mixture of students from different complementary areas, I would think. So we've been very fortunate that we have we've got a good age mix. So you've probably got from the decades, from 20s to 60s, you know, somebody in their 20s, somebody in their 30s, 40s, 50s and 60s. You've got private sector, you've got NGOs, you've got public servants, you've got a gender mix, you have different faith backgrounds, you've got different cultural and geographical backgrounds. So even just in terms of the student experience, that we definitely support each other. There's huge learning as well, I think, in just being in a room of other people who are on the same journey, but in a slightly different way. So, you know, that's always kind of nice, you know, the sort of thing that because it's mature students, it's much more supportive, it's much more sharing, it's much more, oh, I found this, you know. So I've had opportunities to do things and go places and interact with people that I certainly, absolutely guarantee you 100% would not have had I not been doing this. And I'm still not finished it, you know, I don't actually have the piece of paper yet, you know, that sort of way. So even just in terms of, if people are career oriented, and you don't tend to get too many of them in NGOs, you know what I mean? People don't tend to be laddery type people in organizations. Yeah. You know, if you're in Barnardo's, or if you're in Focus, or if you're in Simon, or if you're in Age Action, you're there because of it. It's almost like a vocation. Mm-hmm. But it does move you from where you are to somewhere brand new. Completely brand new.
Yeah.
So I would.
It is important that, like, vocation is a really important theme, because we can't think of everything in terms of just progress and power over others all the time, or advancing over others. But at the same time, in order to advance one's vocation, you need to get access to people and places.
100%. And that's why I kind of think, you know, being angry about a situation is essential. Do you know what I mean? Being moved emotionally is your key. That's your starting point. This isn't right. This has to change. We should be able to do better. But most people are stuck there. Mm. You know, the sort of a way. So this allows you, because you are in a vocational setting, it allows you, it gives you some of the tools to be able to kind of go, okay, baby steps, but, you know, change one thing. You may never even see the impact of what you've done, but it's constantly moving forward. And I just think it's putting that anger and putting that passion into places where it normally wouldn't go. You know what I mean? How do you change your ability to look at how media works? That's, you know, I mean, those are the sort of things that you don't think of in this master's, but are very much a part of it, you know, that have been hugely valuable. And I think the reflective practice bit, it doesn't suit everybody. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody's into it. But because it's hard, it is hard. I said, this isn't a business degree. It's not an accountancy degree. You don't learn 2 + 2 = 4. You're basically been told 2 + 2 = 4, 3 + 3 = 6. So what's 2 and 3? Go figure it out. Do you know what I mean? You're being given tools and then being asked to apply them to your own work practices.
So I'm working in the field of justice, peace, and advocacy. I work for a religious congregation, the Sisters of Our Lady of Apostles. They're a missionary congregation of religious women, and they are based in Cork, in Ardfoyle Convent. So the OLA Sisters, as they're better known, employed me as their justice officer, effectively to undertake their sort of advocacy work around areas of social justice from the perspective of Catholic social teaching, and with a particular focus on environmental issues, understood as care for creation from the Catholic perspective, and particularly with a focus on migrants' rights, women and children.
And in terms then of your own work with the congregation, how does how in a specific sense do you know, questions of social justice impact and influence what you do on a daily basis?
So essentially, it's the focus of everything that I'm doing. The sisters' work as missionaries has mainly been on going out on mission, engaging in community development, building schools, providing education, particularly education for girls. They would have pioneered the education of girls in West Africa, and as well as that, running hospitals, healthcare centres, and that side of things. So in a sense, I mean, that really can be thought of as development work. And so much of their mission work is development work. However, with development work also comes the question of advocacy and engaging with the political system, and engaging with questions of poverty and how to best address poverty, and addressing the causes of poverty rather than simply addressing the consequences. So, you know, while education and healthcare provide supports for people, there is an underlying question of perhaps why are there levels of inequality? When it comes to things like environmental issues, we all know we need to get the carbon footprint down, but there are questions about how is our system structured that it has got us into this situation in the first place, and what do we need to do? Both, obviously, we can do things on a personal level, but then there's a question of how do we engage to transform the system? And a lot of that then comes down to very simply advocacy. So that would be trying to raise awareness amongst the general population. It would be trying to raise awareness amongst key decision makers. And it would be bringing it to the attention of decision makers. And when we talk about decision makers, essentially we're talking about any sort of stakeholder who has some power to effect change. So the question then is, you know, how do we best go about doing that? So the sisters decided that they would employ somebody full time to engage in that work on their behalf. So in one sense, I'm working on their behalf, which means I'm taking direction from them on the issues that they're concerned about, and then I'm figuring out how best to proceed. But it's also about engaging the sisters themselves in that work. You know, they're already engaged in that sort of stuff, and it's just about providing a structured way for them to do that. Mm-hmm. So part of that might be letter writing. Part of it might be producing voters' guides during election time. Part of it might be running events to raise awareness, either amongst the general public or amongst target groups.
And in many respects, your role is a relatively new one within the congregation, and it both adds to and expands on some of the work that they've been doing already, but it also provides a new voice, perhaps, or a new skill set even in the practical sense for the development work and the missionary work that they've been involved in throughout their history.
Absolutely. Like, the OLAs have been doing development work, community development, education and healthcare since they were founded in 1876. They employed me in 2018. So it's not to say that justice wasn't integral to what they were doing before this. It's just that they've decided in the last number of years to put a slight emphasis on it and to employ somebody full time to engage with it in a sort of a slightly more structured, disciplined manner. And like a large part of that would be sort of the increasing focus on justice and the option for the poor, in Catholic social teaching, especially since the 1960s and 70s. And in particular, when it comes to care for creation, since the publication of Laudato Si, the Pope's encyclical in 2015, that has really shaped and directed an awful lot of their work, and really brought care for creation to the core of the social justice issues that they have focused on.
And then turning to the MA itself, how have you found it in terms of an aid to or a development of your present work and what you do in a professional and advocacy context?
Yeah, so I found it actually to be invaluable. Like my background was initially I was working in development work for an overseas volunteering organization. Then I did a stint in teaching. Both those sort of things relate to one another, or at least they did in the way that I was undertaking development work. And I decided then that I wanted to move back into the area of development, but I was particularly interested in that question of the root causes of social injustices and the justice aspect. So a job came up with the OLAs and I applied for it, and thankfully they employed me. But having done so, one of the sisters was placed at my disposal as a sort of a mentor, Sister Magella McCarran, who would have undertaken an awful lot of this sort of work when she was in Nigeria, particularly in relation to Royal Dutch Shell, the oil company, and questions around pollution of the Niger Delta and the Ogoni Land, and questions of injustice that were going on there at the time. Particularly during, it was during military rule in Nigeria. So she's a wealth of experience and knowledge around that. And upon taking on this role, she actually recommended, she said, the best thing you can do right now is professionalize yourself for this work. So while I already previously had my undergrad bachelor's degree, and I also had a master's in colonial studies, on her recommendation, I thought, yeah, I agreed. I thought it was important to place my work in a theoretical structure, and also to learn best practice around how to do this work, and learn a lot of the techniques that I'm actually using now that I got from the MA. So so the MA in Social Justice and Public Policy from Waterford IT was actually perfectly suited to me, particularly because it's a part-time course that's suited to people who are that's designed for people who are currently working in this field. So it's very much a hands-on practical course, and I found it extremely useful.
And in terms of one of the aspects of the MA that's important and that people might be interested in, depending on their interests and their own background, is the research element. How have you found that? And maybe if you could give listeners a sense of what you're working toward in your own research project, and how that uses the tools of social analysis, or rather what you intend to do with the tools of social analysis in it.
Yeah, so like quite interestingly, even though my work is focused on questions of care for creation and questions of migrants' rights and those issues that the OLA sisters have focused on, for my research project, I decided to take an issue of personal interest and run with that. So I'm actually focusing on the question of housing rights and planning law in Ireland, particularly in rural Ireland. I'm from rural Ireland, from Northwest Donegal, and there's an issue about the ability of people from small rural communities and their ability to build homes in those communities, and the whole policy framework around that either supports or limits people's ability to live in their home place. which is also in itself like a question of social justice. It may not be a question of poverty, it may not be a question of inequality per se, but there are questions there about how people are able to flourish as people, how people are able to set up homes, how people are able to live near around their family at the same time as near and around their places of work, and how that is circumscribed and shaped by policy that has developed over the last 40 or 50 years in the Irish state. So that's sort of the area that I'm focusing on for my research. I'm not preempting anything. I don't know how it's going to turn out or necessarily what I'm going to find. But they're the sort of issues that drew me to what I'm researching. Mm-hmm. And I suppose what I want to look at then is how some of the theoretical models developed by Michel Foucault can be used in trying to interpret that policy landscape. Yeah. Particularly ideas around his tools, sort of such as archaeology or genealogy within the sort of the sociology discipline. So that's sort of the take I'm taking on it.
Again, it's that option, I suppose, to combine the theoretical with the policy and with the policy aspect and the more analytical aspect of things. On a final note, have you any advice for prospective entrants about what to expect, what to watch out for, what's expected of them, and indeed why they might take the program in the first place?
Certainly, I would say that the course itself, the content of the course is all very, very useful. I mean, the content focuses on policy analysis, policy development, understanding how policy is developed in Ireland and in the European Union for that matter. There are lots of like very useful technical, practical things there, like the timeline for policy development in Ireland, the budget cycle, that really give you a lot of like good hands-on anchors for your work in whatever area of advocacy or social justice you might be working in. Likewise, sort of the communications module, the strategic planning module, the advocacy and networking module, like they're all very practical hands-on tools that provide you with lots of useful information and lots of useful equipment for undertaking your work. At least that's what I found. As well as then, you know, you mentioned the theoretical side, the questions of theories of justice, the questions of the prophetic tradition, understanding sort of what is just and what it is that we're supposed to be seeking in the work that we're undertaking and what are the goals that we're trying to achieve, as a context for all that sort of more practical policy stuff. So, I mean, I find all of that very useful in my actual day-to-day work. Certainly not all at one time. Different days of the week and different weeks of the month, I find myself drawing in one part of the course versus another part of the course. But the fact that the course is done, as I said, part-time, essentially once a month for an evening and a full day, means that I'm able to continue with my work and take that day off once a month. You know, which isn't doesn't impact on my day job negatively, in that it's not taking time away from my day job once a week, but it is benefiting hugely because it's one day a month then that I'm able to sort of refocus my work based on whatever I'm learning that month, that day during the lectures. So I'd say for anybody who's working in this area, it's well worth it.
John O'Brien is a lecturer in sociology at WIT, and he's also the director of the research element of the program. So, John, what does your role on the program entail, and what's your work as a sociologist more generally?
Oh, well, first of all, very nice to talk to you, Paul. So I look at the research projects. I oversee the research projects on the master's program, and I guess that's really the capstone project of the entire master's. It gives students a chance to take the knowledge they've got from all their different modules and bring it into play in this research project. And basically what they do is they do the standard thing. They do a literature review. They get to know their topic. They begin to conceptualize it. And then they go out and they gather data, produce some kind of new information about the kind of particular question they're interested in, so that they can, you know, really make a contribution in terms of new knowledge to understanding the area a bit better. So yeah, like it's a great thing to be doing on the program, because you kind of get to see them use all of the material they've gained over the course of the program. So yeah, that's what I do with research projects. In terms of what I do as a sociologist, I guess my big interest is alcohol. So I've looked at kind of the history of alcohol. I've looked at the history of the regulation of alcohol. I'm also quite interested in the nighttime economy and that as a vehicle of urban regeneration and all of the kind of payoffs and advantages and disadvantages that are involved in that. So I kind of try and bring some of my own research experience into me advising students on their research projects.
Yeah. And as someone who in their own research engages with, you know, contemporary society, with policy issues, with how all these things impact on the social landscape, why is research important, and what does it give to, you know, the graduate, particularly of a program like this, who might be looking to work across the various sectors, NGOs, or just who wants to put the skills of research to work in a life after this program?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, I mean, just very, very generally to begin with, you know, I think a student, they spend most of their time reading books, and you read other people's research and then compiling it and synthesizing it. And what's great about this, working at the master's level at level 9, is it's a really extended period of time where you can go out and you can create new knowledge. That's obviously very important, especially for the type of master's that the master's in social justice and public policy is, because it's about addressing important questions that we're facing as a society now. And, you know, society is dynamic, it's always changing. So we need this new knowledge. So yeah, just that's in a general sense, I think it's very important for that reason, you know, and, you know, this knowledge is we need knowledge to know how to act and what to do and what policies to make. So it's all, I guess, kind of an important thing. Then it just in terms of like the student himself and what they can get from it. I think, you know, we often say we're living in a knowledge society or an information society. So, you know, the heartbeat of our economy, the bedrock of our economy used to be coal, it used to be iron, you know, it was hard, physical, you know, things, it was energy. But now we kind of talk about it being knowledge. And I think and when we say that, we think about that sometimes in terms of, you know, highly technical knowledge to do with Google and whatever. But, you know, there's also like wisdom as well, you know, where you need to have wise policies. You need to have like an ability to synthesize data from different sources. You need to know where to get data. You need to have an ability to read it and interpret it and analyze it. So, yeah, I would say that we're in a knowledge society. And I think for any role, the skills you get from research are really fundamental. I think doing research, and especially social research, it's not about following kind of really scripted operations. It's about being very flexible, being somebody who can go out and kind of get things done, who can find stuff that's hidden, who can, you know, be an investigator. So it's that kind of like, you have the kind of the technical skills of doing research, but you also have that kind of like very general skills of being a project manager, which I think is very valuable. And then just to be even more kind of specific, I think most public organizations will have a research officer role. And that is, you know, it can be an aspect of a lot of jobs, but it can also be like a specific job where they will need somebody with social research skills to draft documents, to kind of produce kind of position papers, to kind of produce research on the activities that an organization is doing. So yeah, so I think in my answer there, I try to go from like the extreme general down to the very, very specific of kind of what people can get from it in terms of their career. But yeah, I think it's all. Yeah, and I think another thing about the research project that's very nice is that it's a very autonomous period of work. Again, students, most of their experience is in a module, it's very structured. And in a way, the research project, it kind of flips that on its head because you're really in control of your work, you're managing it, you're defining your interests. So it's very much about you and what you want to do and how you're interested. And I think like another way that it flips things on its head is that, you know, normally in a class, you see your instructor now and then, and they're the head of the class and you're in the audience or whatever in the class. But with this, you have a supervisor and you'll have a kind of an ongoing interaction with the supervisor with regular meetings where they will give feedback on your work. They'll try and like constructively engage with you and try and help you as a mentor to develop your project. So it's a really nice combination of autonomy with a very kind of like deep relationship with a kind of senior researcher who can help you develop your work and your interests.
Yeah. And yeah, so what role does policy research and engagement play then in your own work and research?
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, like that is the goal, isn't it? That you're not going to just produce knowledge which kind of is in the ivory tower. You want to connect with kind of public agencies and with politics and with public policy. So it's always something that I think you're thinking of as a researcher. Like you have like, I guess, kind of interest groups. You have groups who are interested in your work and would really kind of value the feedback from academia. So I guess some of the work that I do has relevance for addiction treatment centers. So, you know, this can help to provide like, say, evaluation to the work that they do. Also, it kind of allow you to kind of connect what they do to kind of like broader contexts. Another thing that I'm quite interested in, as I said, was like the nighttime economy research. And like, that's a very fundamental thing for kind of the life and health of cities. It's a very big thing for kind of like urban vitality and urban regeneration. But then you have all kinds of payoffs in terms of, you know, public order problems and in terms of like health problems. So in that research, you know, I guess I try and engage with the business community, but you're also trying to engage with kind of like health groups and also with kind of the people with kind of a stake in public order and kind of crime prevention. So yeah, I mean, that's the goal in research always, is to try and to contribute to policy and to practice.
Yeah. So the researcher then is someone who brings together the philosophical, the ethical, the sense of values and meaning that underpin things. But the researcher also needs to be someone who engages concretely with, you know, social issues, with policy and its practical effects on people.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, research is one of those things that connects the most down-to-earth skills with some of the highest, most philosophical musings. You know, like what you cover in research is the really kind of like the really brass tacks of like, how do we get adequate, reliable, valid knowledge? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're dealing with these very, very, these very kind of hard skills, really, you know, I mean, around, for example, like questionnaires, or how do we talk to people and interview them in a way that kind of doesn't bias their responses and gives us kind of like good insights into how they really feel. But then on the other hand, you're linked with kind of like very, very, very big questions, such as like, why do we generate the knowledge that we do generate? Like, what are we trying to do with this knowledge? What's the political purpose of it? How does this affect the constituencies that we're researching? So yeah, it's linking kind of the brass tacks with kind of very fundamental ethical and political questions. Yeah, I mean, the way I think about social research is that it's there to provide us with kind of a means of orientation. It's like a map that allows us to see the terrain that we're in and kind of the dangers and the challenges that we face. And like, yeah, and values are a very important part about that, because, you know, you can have the map, but you also have to think about where we're going, you know, and that's where your values comes in. And that's really like a notion about the good society. And that's a very fundamental question. But it's the ultimate question that guides our research as well. And when we talk about the good society, there will never be consensus about that. You know, again, like a very nice thing about this program is that you get this kind of very deep engagement with the question about like, what is justice? What is social justice? And yeah, and again, if we're, that's something that's very open, it's very difficult to answer, but you have to do that. And then ultimately, if you have that notion of social justice, you have to think about how do we map our route towards getting there? Where are we in relation to that ideal, which requires knowledge? And then also, you know, how might we get there with all also requires you to do research to gain knowledge about what these strategies could be to get us to this destination.
On a final note, it's helpful to return to the question of values and how they relate to both the economy and the society. The American president Harry S. Truman is famously quoted as saying, "Give me a one-armed economist. All my economists say on the one hand and the other." This line, I'm told, is something of an in-joke within economic circles, but it equally tells us something about the instability of economic and social discourse. By instability, I mean that we would always like to describe our situation in a total authoritative and objective picture. But the reality of life is that it is always already unstable, open to interpretation, and thus change. So there are negatives and there are positives to trying to describe the social and economic situation in which we live. On the one hand, we strive to gain an objective picture, but on the other, because we are human beings in society, in culture, in history, and indeed in the economy, it is impossible to provide what Martin Heidegger, the German philosopher, described as a world picture. But the reason that it is impossible is because we are within it, and because we are within culture, within society, and within the economy, these things are open to change. The philosophical traditions of the 20th century highlighted this instability within modernity, and the implications of this instability shape all our disciplines and discourses. How does one go about accounting for this instability in those numerous spheres of public life and public discourse? And what, if anything, can a more holistic, multidisciplinary, and perhaps we might say human approach offer to these questions? We all wrestle with this dynamic in our academic, in our professional, and in our personal lives. And we might name it in different ways, but we are nonetheless immersed within and moulded by such arguments. And the crises, or crises perhaps, that these realisations produce are maybe perhaps too many to mention here. But one thing we can say is that questions of justice, of society, and indeed of public policy are never only objects. They are the product of ideas, perceptions, and worldviews, and their instability isn't a negative. Rather, this instability represents an urge not to reduce these questions to facts or to objects. Such a reduction limits human flourishing and human growth, and indeed our capacity for change. And speaking of instability, as I record this final piece, the social, political, and economic challenges that we face in the early part of the year 2020 are undoubtedly the product of a crisis. And times of crisis are hardly unfamiliar to human life and experience. Their most telling characteristic is transition, flux,
or what sociologists and anthropologists have described as liminality. In short, they produce uncertainty in various shapes and forms. But amid all this uncertainty, how does one name a crisis? Is it only a matter of figures, numbers, quantities? Or does it speak to something deeper? Over the course of Western history, times of crisis have been marked by the collapse or dismantling of so-called natural orders. Up to the Enlightenment, institutional structures could be justified on the grounds that they mirrored the stable order of the cosmos. But this model was gradually replaced in the post-Enlightenment era with one of functionality, an order that marks much of our contemporary social and political institutions and structures. And we know too that this has had its crisis points. Indeed, we are in one right now. And in part, these crisis points are acquired from the ironic description of such functional orders as being natural, fixed, or inescapable. The economy is as it is. The society is as it is. We begin to confuse what is constructed, what is functional, with itself being natural or fixed or inescapable. When orders and structures that are presumed to be natural, be it the church, be it the state, be it the society, and indeed the economy at large, when these stable structures either collapse or are dismantled, the flux that they produce is fundamentally existential. It's a question of who we are and how we ought to live. Against the backdrop of the European financial crisis in 2013, the Bulgarian-French philosopher Julia Kristeva commented that the financial, economic and political crisis that is spreading throughout Europe and the world today is showing itself to be an existential crisis in which we are lacking a new humanism. And she described this new humanism as one capable of recognizing its source in Christian humanism, but equally of taking into account new disciplines at the heart of new historic and social conditions. The development of this program alongside the work of the humanities as a whole is rooted in this search for a new humanism that takes into account the need to find, to retrieve, and indeed to renew sources of wisdom and put them to work in a spirit of openness, collaboration, and collage. Above all, the MA in Social Justice and Public Policy seeks to produce graduates equipped with the skills and sensibilities to analyse the social and economic challenges we face, but equally the understanding, the sense of questioning, and the openness in all their dimensions that are required to think differently about these questions and these challenges. We don't necessarily provide answers, that would be an audacious, if not arrogant, claim. Rather, we seek to explore the mindset that we need, or that we might need, to answer those questions. And in that sense, perhaps, we resonate or seek to resonate with Paul Tillich's words when he spoke to a class of graduates from Harvard University in 1957, that we hope for more nonconformists among you, for your sake, for the sake of the nation, and for the sake of humanity. On behalf of both WIT and Social Justice Ireland, I want to thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.